You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 456 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live here deep into the night on Monday into Tuesday because of my other responsibilities on Monday evening, including a Falcons game that I had to cover closely over at UpRock Sports and some other stuff. This is a very, very late podcast into the night, but earlier in this evening, I was able to catch up with the great Chris Manning of Locked On Cavaliers, as well as Fear the Sword, a great Cavs analyst. Of course, the Hawks have a lot of intrigue when it comes to the Cavaliers throughout the season, as Cleveland owes Atlanta a top 10 protected first round pick in either 2019 or 2020 before it becomes two second round picks after that. But in addition to that, there was obviously plenty to discuss when it came to the Hawks and the Cavs from Sunday evening. If you missed it, I would definitely encourage you to go back and listen to my original thoughts on the game on Sunday, the Trae Young explosion and all that fun stuff, you know, his 35-point performance. That was our most recent podcast that went up overnight on Sunday night into Monday morning. But I figured I would have Chris on as someone who was on the ground and was actually in the building at the queue on Sunday evening, as well as some big picture stuff when it comes to Trae Young and Colin Sexton and the draft considerations and just how the Cavs might look throughout the season and all kinds of different topics that we cover. This is a crossover episode between our two podcasts. Locked On Hawks, of course, is the one you're listening to now, and Locked On Cavaliers. So this is also probably going to run on his feed as well, but plenty of content when it comes to that. And I thought it would be a nice little addition on the podcast in the middle of what is an interesting kind of off time for the Hawks, as they have Monday and Tuesday off before returning Wednesday home to State Farm Arena. I'm still in the old habits of past seasons, but State Farm Arena will be opening actually on Wednesday evening when Luka Doncic and the Mavs come to town. So we'll have plenty more on that, of course, and we'll have a new podcast on Tuesday evening into Wednesday morning to sort of preview that and some other stuff as well. So please stay tuned for that interview with Chris Manning. Before we get to that interview, though, I do want to talk to you about the good folks at MyBookie. You know, ever since I started this podcast, people have been asking me for advice, and usually it's what team to bet on tonight or this week, or football and basketball and baseball, kind of whatever sport I'm covering. There's a lot of questions about who I should be betting on, and the truth is that I don't really know who's going to win all the time, but if you think you do know, you got to check out mybookie.ag. Remember, sort of who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with, and that's why I always tell people to use MyBookie, and that's because they are the best bet if you want to be placing bets this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online, and their mobile site is easy to use. You can lay down cash and win big today. I would only recommend, honestly, a service to my listeners that's been good to me in the past, and that's why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie, because when you win, they will pay, and they have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player person to business, and for fantasy guys out there, you can even bet all kinds of props and stuff on fantasy points and, you know, over unders and all kinds of stuff like that. So there's lots of exotic wagers if you want to go out and do that, and that could be a lot of fun on a random Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, any time of week. So you can join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar if you use the promo code Locked On. That's promo code Locked On. Activate this offer from MyBookie, and you can visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie, MyBookie.ag. And don't forget to use the promo code Locked On. One more time, that's promo code Locked On when creating your account to get the bonus. And MyBookie will be matching the listeners' deposits up to 100% up to $1,000 this first time. So 100% of your deposit will be matched dollar for dollar up to $1,000, and that's a pretty impressive deal. So go ahead and hop on board. One more time, it's promo code Locked On. You play, you win, and you get paid. So with that said, we can get to the interview that I did with Chris Manning. It's a little bit of a back and forth, not necessarily me interviewing him, but just some free-flowing conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. And if nothing else, we'll see you guys on Wednesday. So here is Chris, and enjoy.
So, Brad, we are doing a continuation of some Cavs-Hawks coverage from the Sunday game, where the Hawks had a 37-point swing to come back and beat the Cavs by 22, and we're going to, I think, specifically talk about the two players that I think both teams are really resting their futures on to some degree, and I think Atlanta obviously has the bigger star potential there in Trae Young, but very jarring differently games from Trae Young and Colin Sexton. People can find this on my Twitter page at CWMWrites, but if you just look at the shot charts from this game, they were playing two different sports. Trae Young was taking threes from literally everywhere. None of his three-pointers, and I didn't notice this literally until I'm looking at this right now, were like on the three-point line. They were all like a couple steps back, which is absolutely wild. Colin Sexton took 1 3. Couldn't even remember when he took it, but he took a lot of mid-range shots and a couple shots of the rim. Trae Young took one shot at the mid-range, just in front of the free throw line. The rest is very much well behind the three-point line and like right on the rim. He's a better passer. He was just shifty, was so good, and Sexton was just out of it in both ends of the floor, really. For me, obviously, like the Hawks winning this game was tough, I think, for the Cavs. They didn't take it very well. But to me, the most jarring thing about this game was just how different these two rookie point guards played and just the contrasting styles of it and sort of how that looked. And it was like, that's all I've really thought about, I think, after this game. And Young was just, in my opinion, in this game, the best player on the floor, which is crazy to some degree because it's his third game it was for him. And Kevin Love was on the floor, too. And Kevin Love's still a pretty good basketball player.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Trae Young is the best player on these two teams right now. That's pretty aggressive, but like the
no,
fact
I
that
mean,
he was
in,
no, I'm with you.
I
was getting there. I mean, I do think that he was the best player on the floor on Sunday, which is kind of staggering to think about. Because you know, obviously the numbers speak for themselves with 35 and 11, but he was just very under control. Took a lot of a lot of quality looks. There were only one or two shots that I would question, and that's really very good for someone who is, you know, I think going to be prone to some shot selection stuff early on in his career. But he was just fantastic in this game, and it was kind of funny after the game, or at least maybe even during the game, I kind of mentioned on Twitter that there were people before the draft that thought Sexton was a better prospect than Young, and those people had a really rough night. It's one game. It's one of those things where it's one game, and this is one of those outliers where I was immediately stressing on the podcast after the game, like, let's not get too out of hand here. Like it's probably good to enjoy that performance, obviously, and Trae Young has looked much better than I thought he was going to look early in his rookie season, so that has to be said, I would say, over and over again. But at the same time, taking one game and not overblowing it is probably a smart idea. But yeah, still, I mean, there was no question that Young was very good and Sexton was really not in this game. And I mean, for me, I like Young better anyway, but Sexton and Young were, as you mentioned, kind of just playing different games. Like, I've been kind of critical of Young for settling for too many floaters, and I think I get the pushback of the fact that he probably needs to right now, and I understand that. It's more of a developmental tool for me. Like, in this game, it wasn't present that much, but the first two games, I thought Young probably settled for too many, you know, of those, like, you know, 8-foot runners that are kind of challenging, relatively low percentage shots that he's just not that great at right now. But in this game, it was threes and it was finishing at the rim. And if you do that, like, good luck trying to stop him, because I mean, there'll obviously be nights where he misses shots from the perimeter, but if he's getting to the rim, everybody's in trouble.
So that's you're hitting on the thing that was really, for me, most impressive, was his ability to get to the rim and just how he got to the rim. And how that contrasted with Sexton was really interesting too, because my biggest gripe with Sexton in this game, aside from just the weirdness on defense, was really he was settling for a lot of mid-range shots. They'd run a pick and roll with him. He would get the space he needed to really use his best ability right now, which is to drive and get at the rim and use that athleticism. And he would take these mid-range shots, which, look, I understand that mid-range shots, they're not analytically friendly. They're not the most, like, modern, sleek, sexy NBA shot. But, like, if you're really good at them, it's still a valuable shot. DeRozan's a very good player for that. Kyrie has that trick in his bag, and it's useful. Colin Sexton does not have that. His jump shot is not smooth. It's got a little hitch to it. The form's okay, but it's not a crisp shot, and it's just tough to see if he's going to make it or not. Trae Young just got to the rim. Trae Young got to the rim basically against whoever he wanted. Some of that was due to the Cavs just being an abomination on defense and not knowing how to switch everything when they were trying to switch everything. But he did a really good job of just breaking guys down. There's a clip you can find of him breaking on Rodney Hood that was just so savvy. He didn't rush it. He was just patient, got by the bigger guy, got by guys longer than him, and had an easy bucket at the rim. And he did this over and over again. And like a lot of other players for them played well. Bazemore played well. Herter played well. I think Torian Prince played really, really well. Alex Len looked like Shaq because the Cavs just couldn't stop him from rolling to the rim. But like Trae Young was, yeah, he was great. Didn't know Alex Len was like that good apparently. But like the guy who made all of this move was Trae Young, and that was very jarring when Colin Sexton was like the guy kind of bringing things to a halt.
Yeah, man, and as someone who covered the draft a lot, like I understand the appeal of Sexton. I think that, especially defensively, he looks, if you just are more of a casual observer, he looks better than he is. He's actually pretty bad defensively, in my opinion. Maybe you've seen something differently than I have, but I think he plays with energy and looks like he's trying really hard, and that sometimes can help, but I think he's kind of bad defensively right now. And then offensively, you know, there's some upside there, but it isn't a situation where you have the very obvious offensive upside that Young has, and that Young's passing, first and foremost, for me, is what I've liked about him for a long time, and then you throw that in with the long-range shooting, neither of which Sexton really has. Like, there's a path for him to be a guy who scores well and potentially efficiently, but it's not going to be the same kind of scoring, and it isn't going to be the same kind of creation for others the way that Young does. So, yeah, the contrast was definitely on full blast here. I don't think that Sexton's as bad as he looked in this game, which should be said, and Young isn't as good as he looked in this game, at least right now. But yeah, it was one of those nights where you just take the pen out and circle this one. Like, this is the probably, I mean, it might be the biggest that the gap actually ever is between those two guys. But for now, I can't imagine that Cavs fans are super thrilled. I mean, I was going to ask you in general. I mean, I know we sort of mentioned it here, but the Cavs defense, I thought, was really, really bad in this game. I know you mentioned it as well, sort of there in passing, but I mean, how much of that has to do with, you know, Young going off and Bazemore going off and Lin going off? I know it's some of it, to be sure, because I thought, especially, you know, Young was kind of unabated to the rim a lot of times, where in his current state, that probably shouldn't happen. He's just not that strong going to the rim yet. Like, and he was getting way too easily to the rim. But, you know, how bad is the Cavs defense, and how bad was it on this night for you?
So the Cavs were, that was the thing that they seemed to be most frustrated with post game, was talking about their lack of communication, their lack of bodying guys, and just the easy looks that got created over and over again by Atlanta, and just how they kept repeating themselves. And Sexton, I mean, to factor him into this, like, he was a big reason that I think they struggled when he was on the floor. Ty Lue basically said post game that, like, he wasn't doing exactly what he was supposed to do in defense. He said with Trae Young, he took it personally and was like trying to like body up Trae Young and go at him 1-on-1, which, like, there's something like interesting about that. And like, kind of like, Colin Sexton is kind of a crazy person in that regard, because he does say, like, just
it sounds like him to me. Like, it sounds like Colin Sexton, yeah, from everything that we've, yeah, heard, honestly.
Yeah, but like, he, and then he was like, nah, like, he played it off, but that's sort of what he does. Like, he doesn't really, when he talks, he doesn't really like say, he sticks to his cliches, let's put it that way. And like, that was an issue, whereas like, I think if they just, I think some of the stuff, if they just keep better track of guys, like, it gets a little bit better. But I think, didn't Atlanta make like 19 of 23s at one point as well? And like, Young just kept getting these like open looks that he was just bombing from. Like, I don't know if you saw this, but like, Larry Nance, like, without being like asked if he was like Steph Curry, like, compared his effect to Steph Curry. And that's, yeah, like, wow.
I mean, it's a comp that's been frustrating for people in Atlanta, I think, that are more in tune, that I know it's very obvious why people would compare Trae Young to Steph Curry. I don't think he plays the same way, at least right now. He's much more of a passer than Curry was as a young player, and I think even still now. But yeah, I get it. If he's going to shoot the way he shot in this game, you know, taking 14 threes, making six of them, that's Curry-like. And obviously the range as well. I get all the comparisons there. I just don't think that's necessarily the best comp, but I also understand it, even if I would push back on it, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, he plays in a way where if he's not defended smartly and not defended well, he's going to be able to let you up. And you mentioned the Hawks three-point shooting. This is a franchise record for the Hawks in three-point shooting, with 22 makes in a game, which is kind of hilarious given all of the records the Cavs set against the Hawks a couple of years ago on three-point shooting. It was the exact opposite of that, albeit on a much less meaningful scale. But yeah, I mean, the fact that it wasn't only Young, too. Like, there was just a lot of shots being made, a lot of open shots being taken. I don't think the Hawks are going to make 47% of their threes a lot of nights this season, but the fact that they were just getting quality looks was encouraging from the Hawks' perspective, and I'm sure frustrating for the Cavs, because, I mean, I read some of the same quotes, and obviously you were there. I read a lot of the quotes that were, like, kind of baffled almost on the Cavs' side defensively, and it felt like they just had no plan, which is not what you want to see, obviously.
Yeah, and, like, them switching is just, like, okay, guys. Like, I God bless Kevin Love, but, like, he is, like, a linear getting switched guy he's going to get driven on, and, like, Rodney Hood, bless his heart, like, got every time he got twitched on a point guard, just got roasted in this game. I want to ask you something, Brad, that's, I think, sort of the big picture thing coming out of this. This is, these two teams play in like a week or so. They play like, I think next Tuesday, actually, again in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about where that's at, but
I know it's in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. These are guys that, I mean, they're in the same draft class. They're going to be compared to each other, whether it's totally fair or not, even if their trajectories change, like these will mark each other. I mean, just based on like sort of what we know about them and just sort of how like we saw these two teams sort of work, do you feel like there's something interesting just about how they project as like a lead option on these teams? Because I found just like what you could do with Trae Young and like what that allowed them to do and what it meant for everybody else just was so much easier to work with than sort of what Sexton did. And obviously Sexton could improve. Trae Young obviously is going to shoot like this every night, at least for now. Things are going to change. But like I thought the framework of sort of what they are and what their baseline is as NBA players was very telling about what these teams are going to be able to do around them and sort of what the implication of that is. I found that just like visually very interesting and just like just how the game sort of flowed. It was just one guy was doing stuff that just like feeds and feeds and feeds into what Atlanta wants to do. And one guy was just kind of doing stuff that I'm not that has like not a lot of return for what it is.
Yeah, I'll be pretty surprised, and I said this before the draft too. I'll be pretty surprised if Sexton, if he's your best player and your number one option offensively, you're in some trouble. Like I don't really see the upside there. Like the pick with Sexton is like you're banking on his competitiveness, and he's a good athlete and all that stuff. Like I think he can be a solid player, but it's one of those things where I don't think you want to. You're not, if you're building your offense around Colin Sexton, there's some limited upside there to be sure. I think we've saw some of that here, and again, I don't want to get too high or too low on either one of these guys off one game, but I had that opinion before this. So I think it does speak to the fact there's just not that elite skill with Sexton. Whereas Young, you know, I'm not projecting necessarily this, but there is the ability potentially for him to be like a no doubt number one offensive option that is like a centerpiece of a quality offense. That was part of the rationale for doing what the Hawks did in the draft, was that Young, if he reaches his ceiling or if he gets to, you know, 80% of his ceiling, that's the number one option because he's already a very, very, very good passer, like borderline elite passer. And if you throw in the shooting, like you can see how that works in a modern NBA offense. Like there's a lot of steps that have to be taken between now and that actually happening. But the building blocks are there for what, you know, what Pierce wants to run in Atlanta, and just in general, what NBA teams, well, at least the smart NBA teams want to run right now is kind of what the Hawks want to do. Like they don't, it doesn't always look like that right now, but because they don't have a ton of talent on the roster, but when they do, you kind of see that. So, I mean, part of its situation, you know, Sexton's in this weird spot with the Cavs where I know you talked about this a lot, I'm sure, but just sort of this hybrid bunch of veterans coming off of the post-LeBron era. You know, Ty Lue is an interesting coach, somebody we know some stuff about, but I haven't seen him in a non-LeBron world. So he's kind of operating. And also, you have George Hill ahead of him. I know the Hawks have Jeremy Lin, but this is definitely Trae Young's team already, which is not really the case for Sexton. So with all that said, I just don't – I think the contrast is real in that I don't see a path personally. And this is me on the outside. I'm not going to see every minute of his career like you will, at least early on. It's one of those things where I don't really see the path to Sexton being a lead option on a good offense. Like that seems funny to say right now after only a few games, but I kind of just thought that before the draft and I still feel that way.
I don't think you're wrong. I don't – and I think in this specific situation, like he has to force their hand to do – stuff that's going to get him these situations. Like it's one of the things that I think also leads to sort of the difference in shot and the number of shot attempts, the difference in how they're getting their looks with Trae Young. He's the focus of what they're doing. Larry Nance hit on this. And I think Thompson hit on this too. Like this is a team that is actively trying to build. And if you talk to Tristan Thompson, if you talk to Kevin Love, if you talk to Kyle Korver, if you talk to any veteran on the Cavs, George Hill, They're not like they want Sexton to get better and grow, and they've been pretty and they want Jetty to grow too, but they want to win games. In like the, I mean, not saying Atlanta, like the players in Atlanta actively don't want to win, but like they sort of know, like, hey, we're gonna rebuild, we're gonna take this slow, we're gonna like do things in time and not force anything. The Cavs are like we're stressed and sort of like everything's going wrong after three games because they're 0-3, and J.R. Smith is like tweeting that he doesn't know why he's not playing and all these different things. Like that's like the difference in situations. And for Sexton, like he's been playing 17 minutes a game as a baseline. He gets more if he plays well. And when he plays bad like this, he doesn't get just the freedom to kind of figure it out. It just means he's going to end up on the bench and It means that he's not helping a team win, and that context of like how these two teams, not just like us as people covering these teams and reporters, but like how that teams actually evaluate him, I think is fundamentally different too. And like that puts a different lens and a different pressure on these guys. Like Trae Young has the freedom to like try to do this stuff right now. Sexton, I think, maybe has to feel like he's got to do what he is good at right now to try to make an impact on a team that wants to win. And those are very different sets of instructions. And I think that's worth noting too.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I mean, it's just sort of this, there's the benefit. I think there's been a lot made for Young of the potential peril of operating in a system where the Hawks are clearly in this rebuild mode. They don't have a ton of talent and all that stuff. Like it can be kind of toxic if you let it be. But I do think that there's something to be said for allowing him to be the centerpiece early on, because that's going to be his role. I mean, at least the Hawks are hoping so in the future, and letting him kind of do that already can be helpful. I mean, there's gonna be ugly nights along the way, but you know, there's something to be said for having a plan in place in the way the Hawks do. Like, not everyone agrees with that plan. I know there's a lot of anti-rebuild people that have been yelling at me for a year and a half, but I think there's an advantage to that versus the potential limbo that the Cavs are kind of in right now. And I know the Hawks fans have a lot of interest in the Cavs this year because of the draft pick, and I think the 0-3 starts leading people to believe that pick might not be coming, which I wanted to ask you about actually. But it's one of those things where there's a value to having a plan that you know is already in place and operating, whereas the Cavs are kind of tinkering in this weird middle ground area.
My prediction right now is the pick from the Korver trade is going to turn into seconds.
I think I agree with you, honestly. And I do think, I wonder if you would agree with this, I think it's more likely to convey in 2020 than 2019 at this moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have no faith that this Cavs team, I didn't think this coming into the season. I'm even more convinced now because some of the things I suspected about like them being trash on defense in particular have been proven right. I'm very sure this is going to be a lottery team that picks in the top 10 unless things just somehow get miraculously better, which, okay. Anything is possible in the East, I guess. But yeah, I think if you're looking at 2020, which I guess, I mean, for Atlanta, like it's not like you're getting a shot at like another like blue chip guy necessarily in the top 10, but it is another first round pick, and that has a lot of value. And for the Cavs, like, they're not going to go out and do it. Like they don't like the word rebuild, and I think they're going to push back against it all year. It's going to get uncomfortable, but that's where they're at. And I think they're going to have to lean into it at some point. And when they do it, like what that means for Colin Sexton, like, will be kind of interesting. Do they let him go free? Does George Hill like tweet a bunch of emojis again because he's pissed about not playing as much?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the sneaky good thing for the Cavs right now is, you know, I think the best thing that could have happened to them is to struggle early on. Because then there are no illusions that this team is going to be, you know, a fringe playoff team. Like if they come out of the gate and, you know, start 10-8, like it's really hard to sell the rebuild at that point and try to like keep your pick that way. But if you start out, you know, they're 0-3 now, that doesn't mean that they can't get better in the near future because they do play some easier games in the future. But, you know, if they start out, you know, 5-11, then it's much easier to, you know, wink at your fan base and kind of say, all right, let's trade some guys and keep our pick. Whereas, you know, if there's a chance that, especially in the East, you know, the path is kind of there if you are any good at all. But if you don't start off that way, it's just a lot easier to sell. So it's almost like this is a good thing. I know it's frustrating because I'm sure as a Cavs fan, as I'm saying this, I'm sure it's not fun. But I mean, I remember a couple of years ago when the Hawks were a team that finished and made the playoffs, but they were actually outscored for the whole season. And I was just kind of, you know, telling people like they won 5 games in a row in the middle of the year. And that kind of flipped the switch to not rebuild. Like they were looking to maybe trade Paul Millsap and trade all these guys in the middle of the season. And then they, you know, kind of had this weird phantom 5-game run. And that allowed them to, you know, keep all the guys except for Kyle Korver, which that's the only deal that actually got made that year. Every other deal got put on hold because they just randomly won 5 games in a row, and that cost them some traction on the rebuild. So, like, you know, being long-term focused is a good thing. And if you have the cover to go ahead and be like, all right, this is not going to be our year, guys. Let's just go ahead and keep this pick and focus on the young guys. There's some value in that.
But I'll put it this way for the Hawks fans listening to this, and I think this will kind of be a good barometer capstone of sort of what we're talking about. The Cavs, between the time that you're listening to this and when they play the Hawks again next week, play the Brooklyn Nets, they play the Detroit Pistons, and those games are Wednesday, Thursday, back-to-back. Then they play the Pacers at home on Saturday before playing the Hawks again next Tuesday. I think they're going to be 0-6 when they play the Hawks next Tuesday, which is not great. I feel like very sure about that, actually.
It's kind of funny, like, looking at sort of in reverse, the Hawks fans are definitely, at least most of them, are rooting against the team in terms of winning this year because they want to keep the pick as high as possible, all that stuff. But the Hawks have this, like, incredibly easy first, like, 10, 11 games of the season. And it was, you know, almost a blessing in disguise in some ways that John Collins has been out, because I think that, you know, these first three games that they've had, they started out on the road in New York, then they went to Memphis and then Cleveland. You know, and now they got a couple more relatively winnable games. Like, there was a, I had this fear that the Hawks were going to start like 6-5 if they were, you know, and be overachieving, but like kind of be like, oh, what are we doing here? And then, you know, Collins goes down, and I know they stole the game. Saying stole is kind of funny because they won by 22, but they come back from 15 down on Sunday and win. And now it's like maybe they're not going to start 0-8, but it's one of those things where, yeah, early season doesn't really, I mean, they all kind of mean the same. But you can kind of make some judgments roster building wise on these early things, especially if you're a team like the Cavs that have all of these pieces that could be traded. The Hawks have a couple, but Cleveland just probably leads the league in guys who might be traded between now and February. Is that right. Inaccurate? I mean, there's
no,
so many
I think if you just look at his social media feed, like J.R. Smith, like, just does not seem long for this situation in some way. It's just like, not,
I mean, DNP against the Hawks in October is kind of brutal, honestly.
And like, well, and like, and he's like on social media being like, yeah, ask the organization why I'm not playing. Like, he's like, I'm like, we're in game three, like, this is wild. Korver, you know, like, I think he's a likely candidate to get traded. George Hill could be someone like that. I think like some of the money stuff is tricky, but you're not wrong. Like, they, like, and especially because they're gonna want to just play young guys at some point, right? Like, there's a point where they? Like, yeah, it's like Zizic has a less clear path because I think Tristan's harder to trade, but like, you want more minutes for Sexton in particular, so you want to get rid of George Hill, and that's totally reasonable.
Yep, and you know, it's I know Hawks fans will be monitoring the Cavs. It's the Cavs and the Mavericks all season long. We'll be getting the close monitoring from Hawks fans, at least unless Cleveland like really goes into the tank and there's like no chance of that pick conveying. If there's any chance at all at that pick holding on to by like February or March, a lot of Hawks fans will be adding to the Fox Sports Ohio you know, league pass numbers and television ratings, because they'll be closely monitoring. Their Hawks fans have gotten very good about monitoring pick protections in the last couple of years, and that will be one that they'll be looking at very, very closely.
Yeah, I'll ask you this. This is kind of just like a curiosity I have about just your view in this team this year. I know you are gonna like look at this more healthy than people might with like the Doncic thing. But like, are people like gonna give like, I think Cavs fans are gonna like have a hard time with Sexton because I think they want the win, and there's just a lot of weight in being a point guard, all these things. But like, are they gonna be like patient and understanding with him? Even he's gonna do really great things, but like Doncic, and he did something like only LeBron has ever done against the Cavs. Like that's what I saw in NBA stats. But like, are they going to be patient with a guy like this? And like, is that as a fan base, like, do you sense that they're going to like be willing to just let him grow into what he's going to become?
Yeah, I do think that overall there's some patience in the fan base right now. I think almost weirdly, him being this good early might hurt that almost, because like, he's going to regress a little bit from, especially from Sunday, and it'll be interesting to see how people react to that. But once the pick was made and people sort of got on board, the bandwagon filled up really quickly, and I think that's good. I mean, that's what fans should be doing. They're supporting their guy, and I think it's almost become adversarial to where people are rooting against Luka and rooting against the national narrative, and you know, outlets like The Ringer like kind of pouring on and talking about how it's like the worst trade of the decade or something like that. Like, that kind of stuff has really sort of galvanized Hawks fans to the point where they're really, really supporting Trae Young, which is good. And I got a little bit of heat for not liking the trade. At the time, I still stand by the fact that I probably wouldn't have done the trade, but I also saw the rationale in it and said that even on the night of, knowing that I didn't like the trade very much. The upside of the deal makes a ton of sense, and Trae Young's upside's off the charts. Then you throw in this, you know, this probable top 10, 12 pick from Dallas. That's really, really good value if it works out. So yeah, I think they've been very supportive. I think that they'll have patience when he struggles. If there's like a long stretch where he struggles, it might be a little bit wary, and or if Doncic is just great. But you know, he's looked good. But I think probably a good thing for Hawks fans is that Doncic is a guy who isn't going to go out and, you know, put up 30-10. It's more like he's just really good almost in his under the radar ways. So that one-on-one statistically isn't going to look so bad at any point this season, which is probably good. And I think just, you know, Hawks fans like to yell and scream about the national media being against them. And for the most part, that's kind of right because they've been overlooked for a long, long time. But this is kind of feeding the beast of that. So just in general, I think Trae Young has gotten a lot of support and he'll still have a lot of support. And it helps that he's fun to watch. I mean, this first game is Wednesday. You know, the Hawks' only national TV game of the season is ESPN on Wednesday. And it's the home opener. It's the new building opening. And it's Luka versus Trae. And it's like got everything that you'd ever want. And I mean, selfishly, I hope it's not terribly lopsided in either direction because it's just more fun to argue about this kind of stuff. But if Trey's great and Luka's not, it's going to be an avalanche. And if it's the other way around, it's going to be a lot of quiet Hawks fans, a lot of yelling nationally from other people. So, I mean, it's going to be fun all season long. I'm probably already sick of it in some ways, but I also take the enjoyment of it knowing that the hot takes will be flowing. And that's at least some attention that the Hawks wouldn't be getting otherwise, because last year the Hawks were just really anonymous and really quiet, and now they at least have this like galvanizing national player who's, you know, very famous and very polarizing, and that makes things very interesting.
Yeah, I have a lot of fun just kind of following this Hawks team as we go along the season. I think more fun than you would looking at the Cavs, because the Cavs could get kind of bleak. But I'm excited that these two teams are going to play it right away. I don't always like when teams are mashed together closely, but I think in this case I think I'm kind of intrigued by it. Just a lot of what we talked about, but also just I think they're just, let's see what adjustments these two teams kind of make, especially because it's in the same building. That'll be a kind of interesting vibe to the whole thing.
For sure, and I do think, you know, eventually I'll get to see Colin Sexton in person. He's actually from Atlanta, so when he comes, quote unquote, home, there'll be a little bit of a homecoming. But
same high school as Little Yachty. Fun fact, I and he said it's a bigger deal, understandably, that like you love Little Yachty than him right now. That's his like benchmark. That's like the second thing I asked him, and he looked at me like, what are you talking about? I'm like,
yeah, it's like the worst. I mean, I feel really bad for Sexton, because when he comes home to Atlanta, it's going to be more about Trae versus Sexton than it's like, you know, most guys when they come home in their rookie season, it's like a, you know, like a big homecoming party. But when he comes to Atlanta, it's going to be not really like that. I'm sure he'll have his people that he is, you know, his family and friends will be there and all that stuff. But it won't be that like warm embrace of a guy coming home in the way that some guys get. Like Amar'e Spellman was going home on Sunday to Cleveland. He had also a nice game, which definitely helped. But there was that like whole, you know, narrative story arc about him before the game and after the game, and him playing well helped it. But I hope Sexton gets that too, just because he's coming home and that's fun. And hopefully he plays a little bit better. I mean, because I honestly, he was so bad on Sunday that I felt bad. So hopefully he plays better the next time around. You know, maybe not at the expense of Young, but at least just performs better, because he's a guy who's easy to root for because he is kind of a crazy person and he plays really hard, and there are flaws there, but I think he's easy to kind of root for, so that helps. I mean, if you want to be positive, that's kind of the way to do it probably.
Yeah, and if he does something crazy against Trae Young, like it could get that like little back and forth could just be kind of interesting. And I would be like here for just like a random rookie point guard duel. That's not a bad way for me to spend a Tuesday night. Really, it's not.
Yeah, not too bad at all, to be sure.
And I'll say this, Atlanta people, like, go watch Trae Young. He is freaking fun in person. Like, did not know that, I'd watched him like a little bit in college, obviously. He translates incredibly in person. Was very fun. Just everything you sort of want in a point guard in like the modern game, and that is just going to do really fun stuff and to watch in person. Cannot recommend the Trae Young is good experience enough with your own two eyes. It's just when he hits shots from deep and you just like watch him do it in person, it's a lot of fun. I would highly, highly recommend it.
Yeah, I'm hoping, and I know Hawks ownership's hoping and all that fun stuff, that they're going to be able to sell some tickets this year. And if, you know, I think this is quietly one of the best things imaginable for them, is him going just nuts in the final road game before their home opener. Like, they're going to sell more tickets now because he's just fun. And I think that was always going to be the case, but him going really, really crazy at a perfect time is going to be sort of that like sort of, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe this, the bank teller sound, like the cashier noise of just people buying more tickets. I'm sure they sold a ton of tickets between Sunday night and tip off on Wednesday just because of what he did on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So I think this has been a Locked On Cavs, Locked On Hawks crossover, a SB Nation crossover as well, with Fela Sword and Peachtree Hoops. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes, and find Locked On Cavs on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs.
Yeah, follow both of our shows. Subscribe to the whole network. Do all that fun stuff. You know, check us out. Leave 5-star feedback. We got shows on baseball and football and colleges, and check everything out. And always fun to talk. And we might do this again after the next one. If nothing else, we'll at least have the young Sexton combo to discuss throughout the season, and plenty of draft pick stuff. So at some point, I'll be having you back to be sure, Chris, because yeah. Hawks fans will be very interested.
Yeah, and it'll be cool when Kyle Korver goes back to Atlanta, because I think I get the vibe that this is his last kind of go around, and I hope he at least gets a cool kind of moment there.
I love Kyle, so I'm looking forward to that as well. Always been a big fan, and enjoy him up in Cleveland as long as he's there, because he's one of the better guys that I've been around in the industry. So
yes,
there you go.
100% agree with that. So this has been Locked On Cavs and a Locked On Hawks. I'm Chris Manning.
I'm Brad Rowland.
Talk to you guys again soon.